Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Hello and good evening. Welcome to the NASCA Stop Child Abuse Now Scan Blog Talk Radio Show. NASCA is the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Victoria Kelly, and I'm your host for this evening, and my co-host is Dr. Nancy, and we are on scan number 3278. We have a single purpose here at NASCA to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional trauma, and neglect, and we do so with only two goals. One is educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone, and to offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Again, we are scan number 3278, and you hear my dog in the background barking. And I'm waiting for my dog, kids to show up. They're going to fix something in my house. So if it gets noisy, that's what's going on. But if you'd like to be a part of the panel this evening, please call 646-595-2118. And my co-host, Dr. Nancy, on the back line, and ask if you'd like to ask any questions or have anything to say. And we would love to have you join us and support our guests. And, we don't have a guest this evening, but we, are working on pulling together topics. Dr. Nancy, you there?
Good evening. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us tonight. We don't have a special guest for tonight, but we do have a special partner of ours who has joined. He's a NASCA member and has guests in the past. So I was happy to see Mr. Bob show up. Because, you know, I know a lot of times he has some great things to talk about. So soon we'll be hearing from him as he, again, is also a survivor of different forms of abuse and always brings great information. I wanted to talk about, you know, some of the common feelings associated with survivors of abuse. In this particular case, I'm going to talk about common feelings associated with survivors of sexual abuse. And so one of the things that, you know, I do a lot of recovery support for sexual abuse survivors counseling. And some of the questions that a lot of people have of level of abuse is, why did this happen to me? You know, they're trying to process, like, is something wrong with me? Did I do something wrong? Is it my fault? You know, they feel like their power was taken away. You know, sexual violence, really, it can happen to anyone, regardless of your age, your race, your gender, your religion. And one in three women and one in six men are sexually assaulted at some point in their lifetime. I'm sorry, I needed to share that statistic because we don't realize, and I think we are starting, we realize it, us survivors realize it, but I don't think the world, or just, you know, people who haven't experienced it realize high those numbers are and how, and unfortunately how common sexual abuse is for men and women, for boys and for girls. And so another question that a lot of people ask is, when will I be okay? You know, when will this be over? When will I stop feeling this sad? Or when will I stop feeling so sad? When will I stop feeling this way? And, you know, it's really hard to understand what someone who has been through that feels. You know, it's never fair. And, but at the end of the day, we survived. And so, you know, we're strong and we are courageous for surviving. And so definitely, you know, sharing our healing and our strength with others is very, very, very important. You know, there are people that can help you get through it. You know, there's support groups. NASA is a great organization where you can come and take a stand in your healing. You know, talking about it can be very healing. It's a form of power, like taking back your power, being able to speak on a platform that allows you to speak on such a large scale, on a platform where so many people are able to tune in. And definitely, you know, empowering others and to let them know that they're not alone in this area of surviving. We do have another person that's going to be calling in, Christina. She's a sexual abuse survivor. She also, you know, has written a book and she shares her story openly. So it's great to have a few people who are strong survivors and that can help other people get some type of idea of how to survive. You know, some people ask, how do I get over this? You know, how do I get over this? That's a question that I hear people ask a lot of times. And, you know, no one was really taught how to heal from trauma. You know, trauma is very scary. It's extremely scary. And there's really no simple steps to healing. You know, healing is just something that you start working on, it starts to happen. But the most important tool in healing is talking about it. And that's why I said that, you know, being on this show and being able to talk about the process of recovery or talk about what happened. I remember when I first came on this show, and I've been on other shows before, but this was the first one that I went deep into details of what, when, who, when, where, what. And it was a battle because I was crying. I was crying. People who know me and they're like, well, please, you should be fine by now. But when I first had to do it, I was scared out of my wits. I was frightened. Why was I frightened? I was terrified because I had been taught to keep a secret. I've been taught to keep a secret since I was 5 years old. And when you get groomed like that and trained like that, and then you do it your whole life after 40-some-odd years, opening your mouth, it's like, I can't believe I just did that. And so it felt like I ran a marathon. I remember my heart was pacing. I was hyperventilating. I was boo-hoo-hooing crying. I was crying ugly. It wasn't like I was like, to the point I had to mute myself. And they were like, are you okay? Do you need a minute? Like, it was like a whole spiritual battle. So can talk about it, and I don't feel that way. But it took me building up that muscle and getting to that place where I was able to open my mouth and not feel scared that my abuser was going to hear me, and I violated the oath of not sharing that secret. And I was the worst person ever because I violated that oath, even though that person violated me, and I really had no business to be protecting that person. But because I was groomed in that manner, and I was, you know, I was taught that that's how you're supposed to do it. I definitely had a big struggle with sharing and going into that. I do see that Miss Christina has joined us. So I'm just going to put in her information, and at some point I'm going to unmute the mics and we're going to have a chitty chat. The next question that, when people ask, you know, how do I get over this? You know, healing is a lifetime journey. And so we have to be gentle with ourselves. We have to remember that healing is a lifetime journey. Don't feel guilty because you're not healing as fast as other people are healing or the way that other people expect you to heal. Healing is a lifetime journey. Be kind to yourself. Be patient with yourself. Okay? And then I've had a lot of people say, no one understands. And I remember when I was 5 years old, and I went through my abuse, and I remember when I was about 9 years old, I saw my first counselor, and I did not respect counselors. I went through quite a few counselors because once I realized that they were just hated in school, they were just, some of them, their parents were psychologists, so then they went into the field. Some of them, they just liked it, so they went into it because they were just curious. Like, they want to understand the mind of the criminal, or they want to understand the mind of this or that. But one of the things, when I would interview a counselor, I would always ask them, have you been through this? Have you been through that? If the answer was no, then they were not validated. Like, they lost brownie points with me. Why was that? Because I needed to see someone who looked like me, sounded like me, went through something similar than what I was dealing with, and could tell me that they actually survived it. And I didn't have an example of that around me. I didn't have anybody around me who had been through similar circumstances that I had been through, and or the level of abuse by a parent that I had experienced, and or that really could tell me that they survived, because I just didn't have that. So at this point, I felt alone. So I find a lot of my clients, when I'm doing counseling, they tell me, they say, no one understands me. No, you know, but I remind them, you're not alone. You know, the comments are very, those feelings are very common for survivors. They feel very alone because most likely when you had all your friends around you, you were not able to have a conversation that said, hey, guess what? My father or my mother sexually abused me. And, you know, so it's a very lonely place because now people are coming forward and talking about it and creating a safe space where people can start to share and not feel like they have to suffer in silence and jump off a cliff because they're struggling with these feelings by themselves. But now other survivors are coming forward and telling this and creates a support system for other people to feel empowered, to be able to voice, you know, their story and win the battle of the mind of feeling alone, okay? So sexual assault is a very common experience for many people, and I'm going to share another statistic. 1 in 3 women will be sexually assaulted in their lifetime, and 1 in 6 men will be sexually assaulted in their lifetime, which is horrible. Again, the fact that these numbers are so high, you know, it's like, okay, but it's been high. It's just that nobody used to talk about it. And now we're talking about it. And I'm almost done, y'all. But, okay, and some people get to the point where they start to say, it wasn't that big of a deal, you know. It was a big deal. What happened was very traumatic. And it does have some effect. But a lot of times people say that just to strengthen themselves through it because maybe a family member, a parent didn't believe them, or maybe other family members were like, keep that in the hush. Those are family secrets. You don't tell what happens in this house. It stays in this house. And so it wasn't that big of a deal, you know. But you don't realize the extent of how, you know, that feeling of, okay, maybe it wasn't that big of a deal could have an effect on you. And that's why people really, you know, just live day to day pretending and ignoring that it didn't happen, but really that's not helpful to the healing process. And then some people will say, I feel like I'm going crazy. And, you know, it's a very difficult situation to deal with as a survivor. And many survivors have that feeling. That's why a lot of people go into depression and, you know, people go into, oh, I deal with schizophrenia and bipolar and da-da-da. You're trying to balance your emotions. There's a lot going on. And unprocessed trauma, it can make the body very, very sick. And that's why it's important for us to talk about it and to get the right help. And other people go into a place where they get into shock and then they start to become very numb. And that's a coping mechanism.
That was a lot. That was a lot.
That's right.
Just want to mention something too about the statistics. You know, you said that, you know, they're very, very high. There's a lot of people that were sexually abused. The sad part about it, though, is most sexual assaults are not reported. So they're even higher than that.
Okay.
We don't really have an accurate amount. And that's what kind of, you know, I go to AA and meet a lot of people, men and women, that have been sexually abused but never told anybody. And when they hear me talking about it, you know, they say, boy, can I talk to you? Because I keep going out and using, and think that's one reason, because I have nobody to talk to about it, you know. And
right.
And I actually feel honored that somebody is willing to, you know, share that. And when you mentioned feeling alone, when I started speaking out, I was one of the first people back in 85, because at that time, there were professionals that were speaking out about abuse. And but they were, you know, observing survivors and then interpreting it. And usually it was pretty clinical, you know, and didn't really, there was no voice of survivors. And so I was one of the first people that started speaking out, and it was pretty scary, you know. But when I started getting groups like Take Back the Night and some other support groups of survivors, then I realized I wasn't alone. And when I read my first poem at a Take Back the Night and a bunch of people came up to me, that's when I realized that continue to speak out, because, you know, I keep hearing, I thought I was alone. I thought I was alone. And it's still, even though all the people that are speaking out, I still got people coming up to me and saying, people aren't talking about this. And it kind of floors you, because it seems like everybody's talking about it. But they're not talking directly to that person, like you said, you know, in like a therapy situation or something with somebody who has been through it.
Yeah,
and
sometimes,
you know,
people talk about their friends will make them feel bad after a while. So you do need to get help and support from a counselor, or, you know, because your friends, they're not, that's not their job, you know.
No, they're not equipped. And a lot of friends can get overwhelmed because, you know, someone might just be leaning on them, you know. And I was in a relationship, and I told my therapist, well, he told me just, he can't keep hearing about this too much. But she says, well, different people can be different things for you, you know. And I guess I never really thought that. I just kind of depended on one person, you know. And, you know, to try to figure out, you know, there's a lot of really heavy stuff that we go through when we're telling our stories.
Right.
And to not, like, I don't know, I don't like the word dump on it, but it's pretty much on somebody that really can't handle it, that hasn't been, you know, educated. That's why I do tell people that it's important to get counseling of some sorts, you know. Some people go to the minister, some go therapy, you know. Yeah.
The other thing I want
to bring up is one quick thing. Maybe you can talk, because I haven't heard a whole lot about it, but you mentioned that that when sexual assault happens and stuff, and your feelings and everything, but like in my life, there were multiple sexual assaults. I mean, for many different people, and I really thought it was about me, you know, because it kept happening to me for different people. So I thought there was something wrong with me that, you know, and then to get blamed by other people saying, oh, you're a victim, you're acting like a victim. Can you comment on any of that? I know it's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's horrible to feel that way. I just want to say, okay, so I wanted Bob to get a chance to share. I know that Christina's here as well. Mrs. Christina, she'll share in a minute as well. So, Bob, we just unmuted your mic, and we just want to join you in the conversation because we're, you know, we're having a conversation.
Yeah, and thank you, ladies. It's how can I put it? I feel like I'm the thorn amongst the roses. What a beautiful way to meet beautiful ladies. I would like to share something that's really present for me at the moment, which will help in my own healing, and then answer a question that you posed earlier about how did I heal. So just bear with me. This is just a little story of what's been happening for me over the last week. Two or three weeks ago, I went and had my sort of annual blood test thing done, you know, and urine and all that sort of stuff, just to make sure that the old machinery is working right. And a couple of results came back that pointed to bowel cancer and or prostate cancer. No. I found this out when I went to see my GP, and she's panicking and bouncing off the walls. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. And like, her fear was infectious, you know. So I've got all these sort of fears going on at that time, because both my mum and dad died of cancer. But it's funny, I walked away and I just remembered that I totally trust in my own process. What am I afraid of? And so I did my own research and then had an ultrasound, and it showed that my kidneys are great, my bladder's great, my prostate's a little bit swollen, but you know, it's all good. So I've just got to wait for the to have a colonoscopy and have a look at that one. But it brought me back to the question that I always ask myself in situations like this is, okay, I have created this event in my life. What is the lesson I need to learn from it? And it's like when I was suffering from depression and I realized that my medications were killing me and that I was going to die, and that pain of depression, I asked myself the same question. And so the lesson I've learned from this recent scary event, if you like, is that I am the only expert on my life. My physical, spiritual, emotional well-being is my responsibility. And so what can I do about it? So I've been on the net and researched stuff. I've gone back to my chlorine dioxide treatment program, which is absolutely brilliant. And I no longer have any fear. There's a little bit of concern, but I just know in my heart of hearts that there are natural treatments out there, which just leads me back to my fundamental belief that nature is nurture. Right. So now I'd like to go and answer the question that you posed. Thanks for listening, because just by sharing that, it helps me release, you know, the feelings about it. So that's, thank you for your attention. You posed a question, how did you heal? Now, for me, the statement that healing is a lifetime process, I don't actually agree with that. I think, for me, anyway, it's been my experience that my first years, you know, the first 7 or 10 years, I was living in fight or flight mode because of my violent background. And I lived under that modus operandi up until I had my first panic attack. You know, I wasn't master of my life. So all that period was I was in victim mode. When I started to heal the wounds of my childhood and actually succeeded, I went from victim mode to survivor mode. You know, because now I'm surviving. I'm not living on fight or flight at the moment anymore. I've reclaimed my belief in me, and I put my trust in God, nature, nurture, creation, whatever you want to call it. And so now, for me, I've moved from survivor mode into thriving mode, because I have taken full responsibility for this life that I do create. Now, for me, and my work on depression, the wounds of childhood for me are just the main ingredient that causes depression in later life. That's just, you know, where I'm coming from. And if you like statistics, in 2019, the World Health Organization published their latest findings, and they reckon there are about something like 280 million people globally suffering from depression. And like everything in consciousness, the evolution of consciousness is exponential. So with all this recent COVID-19 crap that's gone on over the last 3 years, I get a feeling that that number is probably up around 500 million people that are suffering from depression. And depression leads to suicide, which is why my work on eradicating suicide, I love it. I love it. It really, really fires me up. And my solution to that is that suicide prevention for me is too little too late. What needs to happen is a process of re-education, especially in the so-called, experts field, and I'll make a comment about that. But as soon as somebody presents as suffering from depression, they ought to be offered organic, holistic modalities for healing rather than have pills thrown at them. Because all pills do, and in my experience, antidepressants, they detach me from my feelings. And that was what I was afraid of. I was afraid of the power of my feelings. But by going back to that moment of panic in 1984 and realizing that the power of the feelings I was having was just simply a measure of how powerful I am. So by embracing those feelings and releasing all the trapped feelings from the trauma of my childhood, I totally reestablished my belief in myself and my connection to Source. And so, it's an amazing journey, and the answers are so simple. And I love what you said about, for me, I am the only expert on my life. And, I've got a series of videos on YouTube about, I believe that the only experts on depression or any other so-called mental illness, and there's no such thing, they are the experts. Those ordinary folk that have faced their depression, found a way through, they are the real experts. And what I love to see, it's happening a lot in Australia, is there is a strong growing movement of how lived experience is gaining more credibility and more validity. And I'm actually a part of a panel that's putting together recommendations for healing to government under the umbrella of mental health, suicide prevention, and all that sort of stuff. Because we are the only experts. If everybody's unique and everybody's got their own individual story. And so this statement for me is really, really true. It's like everybody holds a piece of the puzzle. And simply by sharing our stories, we help to heal each other. And that's how simple the solution is. Life is not supposed to be complicated. Look at dolphins. That's how we're supposed to live. Leaping and bouncing around and giggling and being fully in the joy of knowing who I am or who you are. So I think I've said enough now, but thank you for allowing me to share.
That was good. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. I want to also open up the mic for Christina. Mrs. Christina, if you could get a chance to join us, it would be great to hear from you on what your thoughts are, experience with recovery. Go ahead. Please join us.
Yes. Hello, everyone. I was just sitting back, just listening to everyone, and especially what Mr. Bob said, how the antidepressants were, kind of detaching him from his feelings and how, he was afraid of the power of his feelings. If I said that wrong, I do apologize. And I think for me in my journey, just briefly, the sexual abuse and molestation started for me beginning at age 3. you know, by a very, very close family member, and then age 4, and then age 5, and then it just continued. And, like, I always felt like I was this target, you know. But after releasing, well, in the process of releasing my book in March of last year, it's like God had allowed me to just begin to feel all these different feelings and things like that. And I think that for so long I was suppressing things because I didn't want to feel my feelings. I had a fear of feeling those feelings all over again. And it really helped me on this journey of healing, because just like Dr. Nancy said earlier, that healing is a lifelong process. You know, so that's one of the things that I'm learning. And I'm learning that it's okay to be mad. You know, I was also looking up the different, let me pull up this here. I think it was like the different levels of healing, the recovery process from trauma being, you know, denial, nothing happened, bargaining, something happened, but, you know, you're trying to bargain with or trying to think yourself out of the situation, in a sense. One of the other steps is anger. Something happened and I'm angry about it. It's okay to be angry. Then sadness, something happened and it cost me a lot. And then acceptance being something happened and I've healed from it. So I think I'm kind of like, in the past year, I've been between anger, sadness, and acceptance. And what I'm learning is that, again, it's okay to be angry. And me as being a believer, you know, loving the Lord and, you know, going by scriptures about, you know, be angry and not sin. Like, so you told me God said that I could be angry, you know, versus growing up and being like, no, you better not. Don't question God. Don't do this. Don't do that. But now I'm finally doing that. I'm finally saying, God, why did you allow this to happen to me? You know, but then being able to look over my life and to see the things that he's allowed me to participate in, to be able to help other people through their journey, and to be okay to say, you know what, that happened. Now I can go through it. I can go through this process and I can bring other people with me. And I think it's also important in the healing journey is, you know, we have to be mindful of who we're sharing certain things with. Because we can't trust everyone with our trauma. Everyone can't carry our trauma, you know, or, you know, you'll talk to somebody or you pouring your heart out. Like, you know, I think everyone has talked so far, you know, about the counselors and quote unquote mental health, like the mental health therapists and things as such. But everyone isn't equipped to carry others' trauma. So we do have to be very, very careful, because sometimes we can say something to someone and then it could trigger them, or they could come back and use what we said to trigger us. I feel like I'm dancing around the question. I hope I'm making sense. But these are the things that's really been helping me, is acknowledging those things. And the other day I found myself getting angry because, I mean, a lot of relatives sexually abused me, you know, and to see them being embraced by other people and like, oh, hey, you know, how you doing, and giving them hugs and things like that. And I'm like, you know what, they're worthy of love too, but I'm okay with where I'm at, with just saying this is how I feel, but I don't like feeling this way. And I'm able to have someone that I can talk to about exactly what it is that I'm feeling about this certain individual without me taking my anger out on the people that's showing them love, because they may not know exactly what this person did to me or to the extent of what they did to me, you know. So I don't know. I don't know, Dr. Nancy, did I answer the question, or did you want me to say more? Or
no, you answered the question. I mean, you said exactly, you know, what it is. So I'm going to have Bob comment, and then you could come back. So,
okay. Go ahead,
Bob, please join us.
Oh, yeah. Coffee, anyone? The kettle's just boiled. Yeah, for me, one of the biggest sicknesses in Western society is, like, codependency. For me, this movement of political correctness is the absolute epitome of codependent behavior and the absolute antithesis of free speech. For me, I believe that speaking my truth is the pathway to healing. Speaking your truth is the pathway to healing. Now, when I share my truth, and I don't blame anybody, I just share my truth, because I believe I follow the only law that there is, God's law, and that's do no harm. So with that in mind, that's how I share my truth. All I do is share what is happening for me. And so this idea that, oh, I can't share what's in my heart because somebody's going to get triggered by it. But from where I'm coming from, all I'm doing is sharing data, sharing my truth. And by sharing my truth, I'm healing. You know, I'm releasing. Now, whoever hears that, whoever gets that data that I am sharing, it is their choice how they respond to the data I have shared. It is not my response. I'm not responsible for the feelings that they choose to have to the data that I have shared. And so it took me a long, long time, and I started about 1992. I started deprogramming myself from codependent behavior. And this little phrase was like the signpost, the guiding light on my journey to get rid of codependent behavior. And it was a simple little phrase: unsolicited advice is abuse. And for me, unsolicited advice immediately denies the sovereignty of whoever is supposed to be the recipient of that advice. Now, I believe we're all sovereign, unique, and equal. And in my own journey, when I'm struggling the most in my life, that's when I learn the most about me and how I can handle my life. But that's when all the rescuers gather around and they see me struggling, and I get comments like, oh, I know what you need to do, Bob, you need to do. And I say, whoa, brother. I'm here to live my life my way, not your way. And if you want to be a true friend, just be around when I put my hand up and ask for help. And I think that's a really important thing, especially in the counseling work I do. I never give advice because I can't, you know. I can only speak for me. My job is to simply provide an environment of acceptance and validation of the reality of the person that's being counseled, you know. So yeah, and right. I wish you could all come and spend some time with me, you know, and I'll take you around the islands here, and we can talk about leading from the heart, living from the heart, not the mind, you know. Yeah, anyway, coffee's ready, folks.
No, I'm done. But you know what, Bob, what you said was so true. Everybody has different styles of counseling. You're going to meet some people that they don't need you to try to fix it. They don't need you to try to fix it. Some people just really, truly need to be heard. And it's okay to share what you've been through. And you need to meet your client where they are. Some people honestly do not need you to try to always fix something. They really just need to be heard and supported. And if you share what helps you to overcome, what has helped you, you know, when you do peer support, you learn that, you know, your job is to share your lived experience and not counsel or tell people what to do. Not counsel, but not tell people what to do and how to do it.
I can't fix anybody. That's their job.
Right. Okay. Miss Christina, I'll let you go ahead and join. I'll sit back again.
I thought that was beautiful what Bob was saying, and I'll take some coffee because it's just like I think for so many years I would feeling responsible for other people's feelings. And I think that is deeply rooted in the abuse, you know, because it's like, okay, I don't want to make them angry. I don't want to do this. I don't want to offend. But like you said, you know, when we speak about what's going on with us, you know, we're talking about that trauma. We're talking it out of our mind. You know, it's an empowering feeling. And I think I shared probably before on this chat that my husband is the first man that I gave my body to. You know, I freely gave my body to, and now he really hears it because I'm, you know, I can talk to him about everything, you know, everything and anything, and that's definitely helping me on this healing journey to be able to be authentically me, and even preparing me to have other conversations with other individuals. And then once I did release my book, finding out things that happened to my closest relatives, like my, and I'll just say my sisters, you know, and I'm like, here it is. We are growing up together. We're always together. And then somehow, some way, you know, things happen to them. But then I immediately blame myself for it because I'm like, I'm there, you know, I'm the big sister and, you know, I wish these things never happened. And then now I'm feeling all these feelings all over again because I hadn't really fully processed what it was that I was going through. And my therapist told me last week, she said, the issue that you're having is you feel responsible for people that you can't control anyone. You know, you're not responsible for them or for their actions or whatever they do. You know, you can only be in control of yourself. So I love that, and I definitely want to start living from my heart, like Bob said, versus living from my mind. And that's my comment. I don't know if you have wanted me to share a little bit more about my story, Dr. Nancy, but I'm just enjoying the conversation because I needed it. I really needed this conversation. I needed to hear this. So thank you for inviting me.
Definitely would love to hear a little bit more about your story. Bob, did you want to reply to that? Because you shared about the heart, and I thought that was very powerful too.
Yeah, well, what for me, this may sound weird, but it's simple, you know. For me, I drive my life under two principles, the KISS principle, keep it simple, sovereign. I know I've changed it because I have realized and noticed in my life that the words I choose to use actually create my reality. So I place my words with surgical precision. So the first principle, keep it simple, sovereign. And the second principle is the SUE principle, something I coined about 15 years ago, SUE. We're all sovereign, unique, and equal, and everything else flows from that. And that's why I say, you know, everybody holds a piece of the puzzle, and all we're going to do is sit around the campfire and share our stories from our heart, and we help to heal each other. Now, this is what people think is a bit woo-woo, a bit weird. I now live in a feeling universe and not a thinking universe. I've learned how to silence my mind. What do I mean about living in a feeling universe? Well, there was that French philosopher Descartes that said, I think, therefore, I am. And that seems to be like a global mantra in civilization. But for me, I feel, therefore, I am. I experience this life through my senses, through my feelings. Like I feel the warmth of the sun on my skin. I smell the sweet tang of the rotting mangoes. I hear the sound of the kookaburras as they sing in a new day. So I experience this life through my feelings. So for me, it is I feel, therefore I am, not I think, therefore I am. And that's where society has been misled for well over 100 years anyway, probably thousands of years. And living in heart space, my life is so simple. And if ever my life gets complicated, I know that somehow my mind has slipped back into the driving seat. So I just reach in, grab it by the scruff of the neck, throw it in the trunk and put my heart back in the driving seat. and my life is simple again. And what do I mean by that? I just listen to my body. My body always knows what it needs. My body is always sending me messages. All I have to do is listen and obey. So my life now is, when my body's tired, we sleep. And when my body's awake, we play. End of story. That's my life. And if I can get there, anybody can. Oh, that was good coffee.
Go ahead, Miss Christina.
Yes, more good coffee. So just, I guess, briefly. So, again, it was a very close family member that started with me at age 3. And I remember telling my mom, like, you know, I'm burning down there. And so she ended up taking me in to get examined. But it's still, like, to be honest, the other day I started thinking about this is that I want to find out exactly what the doctor had told my mom. So that's something that's been lingering in the back of my mind, and I want to sit down and have a conversation with her. But I also have to be mindful that I'm doing this for me as part of my journey versus me, like, I feel like my thoughts are getting in the way of me wanting to protect her by me not asking that question, but it's something that's been, like, brewing in my mind and in my heart to just say, like, what exactly did they find? Because, I mean, I still have scars there, and here it is, that was over 30 years ago. So then age 4, because, I mean, we grew up in the projects. You know, my mom didn't have a lot. She was a teenage parent of 2 girls, you know, single parent at that. And we didn't live in the best of neighborhood. And I think a lot of things my mom went through, it just kind of trickled down to myself and my sisters. And I really don't want that to continue. Like some of us say, like, breaking generational curses. And that's something that I pray and I hope never happens to children that I may have. So age 4, we were heading home. You know, my mom had a male friend. And she didn't think anything of it, and she let him sleep in the bed. It was all of us sleeping in the bed together, all 4 of us. And when my mom woke up, he was between my legs doing things to me that he should be doing to my mother. And then right before he was going to insert himself, my mom woke up. She kept a machete underneath her bed, and she kept a machete in the car. So she grabbed the machete, and she went to, like, swing it at him. I think she cut him, like, maybe, like, below his eye, but that's another story. At the time, we didn't have a phone, a house phone or a cell phone or anything like that. So my mom, when she did swing at him to strike him with the machete, he jumped up, he ran out the house, and then my mom ran, got my sister and I up. We went to our car. We had a car, and then we went to, like, the nearest payphone so she could call the police. And then after that, we ended up moving in with some relatives, and I had a female cousin who was probably about age 13, and I was 5, and she began to do things to me, and she introduced me to pornography. And from that point, I had developed an addiction to that. And then I also started getting high around that age as well. I started using aerosol air freshener, and the craziest thing about it that I think about today is, like, perhaps I was subconsciously trying to escape what my cousin was doing to me. And so I try to encourage parents, like, hey, if you don't, just put up the aerosol. You know, you don't want children using that because you never know. But that's something that I use to try to numb the pain at age 5. And I would get high with that from age 5 until age 11. So about 6 years, like, nobody knew that I had an addiction to this freaking aerosol air freshener. And from that, my mom had married my stepdad when I was 7, and then he had 2 cousins that would spend the night with us. And the older brother of the 2, he would molest me, and that went on for a couple of years. And I really think that he was grooming me, because when I became older, so from age 7 to about age 13, that's when he began to try to pursue a relationship with me. And then age 10, I went to visit a church with one of our neighbors, and going somewhere that you think, oh, this is supposed to be safe, I was violated, sexually violated on the church bus going back home. And then after that, it was other cousins, female cousins, male cousins. And then age 13, I met this guy. He was, I want to say he was 19 at the time, and I was 13. He was an in-law of one of my aunts, and he began to pursue me. He wanted to pursue a relationship with me. I thought this was the thing to do because I'm like, okay, well, hey, he want to be with me, so that's what we're going to do. But even at that time, I questioned my sexuality because of the molestation by female relatives and the pornography and different things like that. So anyway, we called ourselves in a relationship. He asked me to write him because I met him on a family trip. My aunt was stationed in a different country, so whenever she would come over to the States, and at the time I was living in Florida, I'm in Chicago now, but when I was living in Florida, my aunt came down to visit her family, like down in Florida, and so her in-laws lived in a different state, including him, so they came down to visit her, and we all decided to go on like a family trip to one of the theme parks, and that's where we met, and he wanted to keep in contact with me, and that's what we did. He would tell me all of his sexual fantasies and different things like that, and I succumbed to him. I just, you know, like I enjoyed the attention that I received from him. And one particular evening, my mom had found my purse with a letter addressed to him. And that letter, that particular letter that was addressed to him was very provocative in nature, very sexual in nature. All the things that we would discuss, I wrote that in the letter to send to him. So it could have been God saving grace that my mom found that letter. So she read the letter. She called him, spoke with him, spoke with his mom, his dad, and was like questioning them and was like, hey, did you have sex with my daughter? He denied it. And when he did that, and he also referred to me as being crazy, like she was delusional, I don't know what she's talking about. He was just saying all kinds of crazy stuff about me that was very hurtful. And I took that as a way to say, you know what, I'm going to go find me a boyfriend. If he don't want to be my boyfriend, I'm going to find one. And that led me down a spiral of a sexual addiction. And age 14, I decided I wanted to go out. I snuck out the house to try to find a boyfriend, and that went from me having sex with one person to multiple men at night. And I would do that. I did that for probably about a good 6 months. And it's just when I was out there, I was trying to look for all these different things that I thought that I was missing. You know, I could have died out there, but I didn't care at that point. And that's one of the things, too, of like that can be one of the symptoms of being sexually molested or sexually abused at a young age. And I hope people can hear me. Okay. So
we hear you.
Okay, cool. Sorry about that. So once that happened, you know, I felt invincible. I felt like nothing could touch me. I could just do whatever I thought I was being bad enough to do. But in the same sense, I was living a double life because here it is. I'm walking the streets at night from 11 p.m. until about 5 a.m. in the morning. I had to get back in at 5 o'clock in the morning so I can get ready for school. Like, I never slept. And like I said, I could have died out there, but I didn't care. You know, I was feeding this burning desire in me that wanted to feel loved and needed. And then also, I think I didn't share this before, but I wanted to have a baby. I wanted to have a baby so bad so I would have someone to love me and I can love that baby. But that wasn't the way to do it. Then to fast forward to age 15. Age 15 is when I surrendered my life to the Lord. At that point, I realized that, you know, the things that I was doing, it wasn't just hurting my parents and I wasn't just being disobedient to my parents, but I felt like I was hurting and breaking God's heart, and I didn't want to do that anymore. So I surrendered my life to the Lord. I, just the things that I started to do after that point, it began to hurt me because, again, I'm like, I'm breaking God's heart by doing all these different things. And then as an adult, the sexual trauma continued. You know, I was with a high school friend one day, and he sexually violated me. And then once I found out that he was married, because his wife was going through his phone and she seen like some messages between he and I, and she threatened to kill me. And, you know, and I was trying to explain to her what happened, you know, like he raped me. He didn't, it wasn't something that I just went over there and just like, hey, let's have sex. He never told me that he was married. We were high school friends. So I thought that he would share something like that with me. And then I got into a relationship with a guy who told me that, he said, oh, you know, God told me that you're my wife. And I thought, okay, well, you know, that's what the word says, you know. He who finds a wife finds a good thing. And, like, who am I to question God? Even though I knew in my heart that this possibly couldn't have been the person for me. But, again, I allowed so much trauma to transform my life in ways that I wanted it to be convenient for other people to continue to do things to me at my cost of sanity, at my cost of purity, at my cost of whatever it is. I wanted to make things convenient for everyone else, and becoming a people pleaser and stuff like that. And that's also a symptom of that. So when we recognize those things, like, you know what, I'm trying to please this, like, what in me feels like I'm not enough, just me. You know, I don't have to give you my body to show you that I'm enough, you know. So eventually, God had gotten me out of that relationship because we were only in a relationship for like a couple of months, but I felt like it was several years. And I felt like the only way I could get out of that relationship is if I were to die. And I don't believe that was my time. You know, God was like, no, this ain't it. You know, so I thank God that I didn't die in that situation of, he was constantly like, the sexual abuse, the emotional abuse, you know, the spiritual abuse. He was constantly using God's word against me and things like that. And it was very, very painful. But the moment that I opened up my mouth and started to share what was going on between he and I, that's when I gained the strength to finally leave. And I couldn't just leave by myself. There were different things I had to do to separate myself from him, and that's having accountability partners. And that alone in your healing journey and healing process is very, very helpful when you have people that can hold you accountable. You know, I think like Bob also said, I'm sorry, I keep calling him Bob, but I think like Bob had said that, you know, just be there when I raise my hand and say that I need help. And I'm grateful for those people that God has placed in my life. And with my husband, you know, shared, you know, his affections toward me or his desire to marry me, I'm just like, I was running at first. Still at times, I think unhealed areas of trauma causes me to sometimes run from him today. And that's why I'm in the groups that I'm in and able to share my story. And that's why I'm in therapy right now, because what those people in my past did to me has nothing to do with my husband. And he's even apologized to me. He's like, I apologize for everything anyone has ever done to you. And I'm just like, oh, okay, you know. But that's my story in a snippet. And I just, you know, I appreciate platforms like this to listen to other stories and to be able to share my story. And we come together because we can really heal together and grow together. So that's it, Dr. Nancy.
Thank you for that, Mrs. Christina. You are a true survivor. Go ahead, Bob. I know you've been waiting patiently, and anything you would like to add or share?
Yeah. I just like to say that this is a beautiful conversation, and there's no such thing as coincidence. It's synchronicity rocks. But what was prompted for me from Christine's last sharing is something I call the wounds and lessons of childhood. Now, as a child, the lessons I learned from Mum was, Mum is always beating me, therefore she does not love me, therefore I'm unlovable, and it's all my fault, and that the world is a dangerous place because I was always getting hit. And then the lesson I learned from Dad was, Dad never spends any time with me, therefore he does not love me, therefore I'm unlovable, it's all my fault. So that just says, like, the child that's been abused doesn't stop loving its abusers, it stops loving itself. And that is the big wound. That is, how can I put it, the goal in recovery for me is to get to that state where I love me and I'm content with me. And that's really, really hard to get to. It takes a long time because, you know, my formative years were all based around the premise that I was unlovable. And so I spent all of my childhood trying to be the perfect child, you know, trying to be the poster child to take attention away from my dysfunctional family. But that's not my job. It wasn't my job to fix my family. It's only my job to fix me. So now, what I would like to say to Christina is, and this just comes from a place of love, what I said earlier about every event that I create in my life holds a lesson. And what is the lesson that I need to learn? And so, my feeling is on what Christina has shared, darling, is you finally learned a lesson. You created all these horrific events in your life and they kept on going and going and going and repeating themselves because you were operating on under the old modus operandi. And my mum did the same thing. She wanted other people to love her so she could feel that, you know, she was lovable, but she did that by trading sex for love. And and that's a pathway to ruination. For me, it's all about loving myself, and not in a narcissistic way. If I don't love myself, how can I really love another person? But I believe in the core of every beautiful human being, and we're all beautiful, there is this place of unconditional love for everyone. And I see that as my ultimate goal, to get to that state of unconditional love for everyone. So good on you, Christina. You're doing a great job. And you like my coffee.
Thank you.
Bye, Christina.
Yes, thank you guys. You're welcome.
Would you like to say anything else about that?
You want to say? Yeah. Well, my husband, he's been listening. Can he say something?
He sure can.
Yep, this is Mr. Jones. Okay.
This has been very therapeutic for my wife. And I thank you guys, not just from the bottom, not from the top, but with all my heart. Thank you guys. And Yeshua's my name.
Beautiful. Good on you, mate.
Thank you for your support. We appreciate you sharing.
Yes.
Anybody else? Go ahead, Ms. Christina. You want to say something about what you have? Hold on. He has more to say.
Oh, no. No, we were just saying thank you. And, you know, there's things, I think, in this process of loving myself or learning to love myself the right way is just being okay with not being okay all the time and just acknowledging what I'm feeling in the moment. But also seeing that, you know what, some feelings are fleeting, you know, so it doesn't mean that, you know, if I have a bad day, then I'm going to have a bad life. So those are some key points that I'm learning about myself and about life in general.
Well, this is Victoria. I'm back on. And, I like talking about feelings and stuff.
Yeah.
I had to learn that my feelings are not necessarily reality, too, you know. Sometimes I get really, really scared, and I feel the danger all around me and stuff, and, like, I almost got to stop myself and say, you know, I'm in a safe place, and that can be hard to reassure myself that,
hey,
you
Christina.
Know, things are going to be okay.
Are you here?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, Christina, sometimes I'm happy, sometimes I'm sad, but I'm always content, you know? If I was happy all the time, how would I know? You know, we need the duality to appreciate each extent of the spectrum, don't we? You know? That's pretty
wow.
deep, eh?
Wow. Yes, we do. Wow.
I thought that was it was great that we were able to share that. And again, this just reinforces the fact that this community is so important and so needed, because some people may experience feeling alone, like they're going through this alone, and that's why they go into deep depression, isolation, and unfortunately suicide. And so the purpose of creating these spaces is to create community and just to remind ourselves that we're not alone, you know, and we can get through this. We're not alone. Anybody else would like to say anything else? Please join.
Yeah, I want to add on to that there are so many, so much more now than there ever was before, you know, with the kind of groups there are, and we could do Zoom and all the other things, you know. I think COVID made us think outside the box and to reach out. If anybody's out there struggling, please reach out to somebody. Go on the NASCA website. There's a place for contact us. There's a place for the ambassadors. And I'm Victoria, and I'm the Minnesota ambassador. And you don't have to be in Minnesota to call me. I'm available, and there's many other people available. A lot of the people that are on there are also hosts, have been guests, and are really dedicated to helping survivors. And we were once there, too. We were once feeling alone and feeling isolated, or felt like we had an overwhelming amount of problems that could never get any better. I really believe that I was just going to be a survivor. And that's all I was going to be, just surviving, surviving, surviving. And I am a thriver now. I'm actually living a life that I could have never imagined, ever imagined. And it's possible for every single person to get beyond that, the way I felt like I was in inspiration and that there was no way out, you know. And the way that I feel that I got out of that was reaching out, and that takes a lot of courage. A lot of strength. It's not a weakness. And that there's people out there that do want to help, you know. But you don't have to tell your story to anybody that you don't feel safe with. And we also encourage you very much to get some kind of support. And there are many different ways of support. There's many different ways of healing, like Dr. Yancey said in the beginning, that, you know, there are many different ways. You know, there's no amount of time that you have to work. This is about a journey, not a destination. And people ask me if I'm healed, and they said I'll be healing till my last breath. because I want to continue to keep changing and growing and learning and helping others. And, you know, that's my love. That's my process. And enjoying life, which I never did before. I just made it through, you know, and there's really a big difference of going out and finding things that you enjoy and really living your life to your fullest, because you've always deserved that. And just the fact that you survived is enough, you know. because there's a lot of people that didn't. And whoever's listening, we're glad that you're still here to keep continuing this journey. And we hope that we could be a part of your journey, NASCA, as the NASCA family. We welcome you.
Thank you for that, Ms. Victoria. I'm also one of the ambassadors cover the Georgia area. And, you know, you can always reach out. We're on the website. There's a lot of resources on the website. If you don't want to reach out to us, there's also resources for other ways to reach out and to find help and support. So just know that you're not alone. And then you can always, you're always welcome to join us on these talk shows and share or just listen. And, you know, a lot of times, just like Bob said earlier, we're experts. We're all doctors on this panel, even though we may not all have a doctorate. We are doctors and experts in our own recovery and in our own experience. And so people who have not experienced what we have experienced may not be able to support you the way that we may be able to support you. So just know that, you know, like, again, you know, it's okay if you're just surviving right now, but you want to get to a place of not just surviving but also thriving. Bob, would you like to share anything else?
Yeah, I just unmute myself. Yeah, for me, I love what Victoria said about she's thriving. And I believe, you know, my life is just absolutely bloody amazing. And I consider my healing journey as about 99% complete. I've still got little areas where I don't love myself enough. But so if I look at my body and its entirety and in all dimensions, I am now in the process of taking my healing, my healed body, and building it up, you know, exercising the muscles, getting my body in all arenas to be as fit and as vibrant as I possibly can. And so, you know, spiritually, physically, emotionally, and even intellectually. But a phrase I came across years and years ago, and it's probably the best thing that Eckhart Tolle has ever said, is totally let go of the need to understand anything. And that was so liberating for me, because with my amazing intellect, I was trying to think of the answers, until I realized that the mind is always looking for answers, but the heart already knows. So there was nothing outside of me that could heal me. I found all my own solutions, that's a Bob word, solutions, within my own heart. And so now my heart is my only compass and my inner intuition is my only guide. Ta-da! And coffee, of course.
Go ahead, Christina. We'd like to make a comment. We're almost getting to that ending of the show. We just want to make sure y'all get a chance to share. Christina,
I'm sorry, Dr. Nancy. I also was kind of piggyback off of what Victoria said about life. You know, she said it's not a destination, you know. So, well, in life, thing is not a destination. Like, so just keep going and definitely want to embrace the thriving piece of life. Like it, we don't have to, you know, continue on in those, I think they call it in recovery, the stinking thinking, because that's not going to get us anywhere. So this has been very encouraging.
In 1985, well, in 2000, I decided to just self-publish just some of my writings. So, you know, kind of poetry, prose, whatever. And I changed my name because my abuser was still out there and I was speaking. So I changed my name, found it in a name book. And Victoria means victorious. Ruth was my middle name, which means spirit. And Kelly means warrior. So my name is Victorious Spirit Warrior. When I started speaking, under that name. I didn't feel like that, but I do today. And I look back, you know, and I have 37 years of sobriety, which I didn't think I could get any at all. And I really didn't think there was hope for me. So it's, you know, yeah, you can go a long way, but a lot of times it takes someone else to believe in you as well, you know. And I can't say enough for Niska. I met Bill over 14 years ago, and I wouldn't tell my story at all about child abuse. I'm telling about being a battered woman, sexual assault victim, and being used in systems of prostitution. And all those, I didn't escape my biological father until 21, and my sexual abuse started infancy. And, you know, I just, well, I went into a psych ward, well, I went to a psych ward a lot of times, but the one time I went in, and I hadn't even gotten admitted, and I was suicidal. And I sat down with a psychiatrist to decide whether he was going to let me in or not. And I kind of told a little bit about how he kept coming after me and stuff. Well, I didn't know at the time that he'd be Dean, so I couldn't remember what he had done before to me, you know. And the psychiatrist says to me, well, he must have enjoyed it, or he wouldn't have stayed so long and he wouldn't have kept going back. And I hadn't even been admitted yet. I felt like just flying out of there, you know. And I did. I don't know what kept me in that chair. But so I kept, you know, real close mouth about everything. And until I was on MySpace, that's what they mean. I belonged to a group for incest survivors. And that's where I really started getting a lot of the support. And just happened to go on Google or whatever the heck it was at the time, looking up, you know, adult survivors of child abuse of some sorts. And I don't even know what words I put in. But NASCA popped up and Bill's name popped up, and I called him and started talking to him, and did one show on the radio, you know, talked to him for quite a while and participated in some of the shows, and I became a guest. And I'll tell you what, telling my story, my shame just started melting away. And that's really how I got involved in NASCA. But I couldn't believe the amount of shame that I had, that I didn't even know I had, you know, until I started realizing it wasn't my fault. And, you know, there's no magic age. Like, you know, I guess people just thought you hit the magic age of 18 and all this knowledge falls on you. And even though I ended up bringing him to court and everything, I didn't test or nothing, but brought him to court for an incident that happened when I was 17, where my mother witnessed. He was only part of therapy, which is basically a bunch of abusers sitting around discussing what they did to people and sexual predators. And they called me up after 3 years and told me graduated. Like, I don't know what they thought. I was going to throw them a party or something. I don't know. But anyway, I said, oh, my God. And then I was really afraid because, it was, you know, in their mind, it sounded like they thought he was cured. I don't know. But anyway, I was scared to death of him until I found out. I went on Facebook one day. My uncle wrote down that he had passed away. And I went on Facebook and wrote, you know, normally you can't shut me up, or I have plenty to say, whatever I says, but I can't even put into words the amount of freedom I feel today knowing that he's gone, you know. And my cousin unfriended me. But, you know, I felt I had a friend out there. But I'm, you know, I'm so grateful that I've come so far. But without other people helping me and supporting me, I know I wouldn't be where I am. And NASCA has been a huge part of it. So, and Bill Murray is the founder of NASCA and recovering right now from surgery. So, so I'll send him some positive energy.
Yes, we appreciate Bill. He really has really worked really hard to continue to keep this platform available for us to come together. And so we do send him our love as he is recovering and our well wishes and prayers. All, you know, we're getting to the ending of that time. I don't know if you guys have any closing positive words to leave behind. So we would love to hear from you. And Victoria, thank you for sharing your testimony every time. Very powerful. And thank you for being so transparent.
I like ending with one thing, and this is the NASCA prayer that we say. It's, please grant me the serenity to forgive myself because I always try my best, and the wisdom to know that I am a good person with a kind heart. And I always like to end with that. So thank you, everybody. And thank you, Dr. Nancy, like and Bob, and
what about sharing,
Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, what I would like to share in closing is just, it's a bit of NASCA information. I would like to please encourage anybody that's listening or anybody that finds NASCA to don't forget the 3 weekly Zoom meetings, because that's a beautiful platform to get eyeball to eyeball and get some real healing happening. And it's free and it's easy, you know, you don't even have to get out of bed. So please, please, please come along to the three times a week NASCA Zoom meetings, and the details are on the NASCA website page. Thank you.
Right, and that's NASCA, NASCA.org is our website, and we've got like 42 programs on there, and like Dr. Nancy said, even if you just want information, or you want to share information with somebody that cares about you and you want to understand things a little bit better, or anybody that's interested in these topics, there's just so much information on there. And then also, so we are on scan number 3278, so there's 3,278 episodes that are all archived, and you can go back and listen to those. And we also are on Facebook and have a closed Facebook group where you can either go on and read what other people have written. It's an adult platform, so you don't have to put up warning things because this is an adult platform. And then that's just for adult survivors of child abuse. And then there's an open one as well, and anyone can join that. So we hope that you're getting the support you need. And if you need more support, more individual support, please contact one of us, and we will do the best that we can. And if we can't answer your questions, I always say, I don't know everything. Matter of fact, I don't know a lot, but I'm willing to go and help you find out. And because people help me, I feel that I want to give back. And is it Christina? Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Christina? Yeah. Did Dr. Nancy say that you wrote a book? You want to share with us that information? We got a little bit of time left.
Sure. Thank you. So my book is titled Suppressed Wounds, Redemption and Recovery. So again, Suppressed Wounds, Redemption and Recovery. And Victoria's, I write poetry as well. So this was like a spinoff of one of the poetry pieces I wrote titled Suppressed Wounds. And I think that I found a lot of healing through writing that piece, Suppressed Wounds, because I'm talking about like the things that we suppress and how we can overcome these things, and being able to talk to that little girl or little boy that's inside of all of us and to say that it's okay to come out to play because it's a new day. So that's available on Amazon. Again, that's Suppressed Wounds, Redemption and Recovery. Thank you.
Hey, while we're promoting...
You also want to tell us your full name so that in case you find it that way?
Yes, Christina Jones, and that's Christina spelled with a K, K-R-I-S-T-I-N-A. Last name is Jones. And again, the book is Suppressed Wounds, Redemption and Recovery. And it's a spinoff of my spoken word piece, Suppressed Wounds.
Awesome. Thank you so very much. Really appreciate it.
Great,
you're
Christine.
Welcome.
Right. Great.
Thank you, guys.
A quick closing comment. My books are available on the internet. You just have to search for The Gift of Depression, space Bob Eden. They're available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, a lot of others. So I've got ebook, paperback, audio books, and my YouTube channel has got loads of free videos on self-help, personal growth, how I got to where I am today. So it's just a bit of shameless self-promotion. So it's The Gift of Depression, Bob Eden, and you'll find all my works. Thank you very much for allowing me to share.
Yeah.
And copy.
Thank you. And then I want to say, too, that I have a book in the works. I have two women's studies professors that are writing it because there's no way I could do it. But it's my story told to them. And they got all my journals. I started trying to read some of my journals, but I got into some of my alters that were writing because I had 31 personalities and they were writing these journals. And I started reading it, and I got so down in that dark, deep pit of depression that one of the alters was in that I almost did get back out. And they're willing to take the journals and look at it from, you know, not in the perspective like I would be in there. And it's in the hands of an editor, and they've already got a publisher that has accepted it. So we're getting really close for that to be coming out. So, and that's kind of a, like Christina, you were saying, it's a spinoff of my writings. And that book was entitled Journey Within, a Survivor's Story.
Okay, well, so, good job, y'all. I'm going to squeeze in my book last. I wrote a book. We got 2 minutes. I'm going to squeeze it in there real quick, y'all. So my book is called My Costa Rican Hummingbird Sings, Breaking the Bondage and Answering the Call. I wrote that book in 2017. It was focused on mental health and suicide prevention and, recovering from addictions and recovering from child abuse and sexual abuse and just severe trauma and talking about some of the things that helped me along my journey. And so I shared that in my book. I had the book on Amazon. Now it's down for a little bit. I may try to split the book into, because the book is 300 and some odd pages. It's really thick. So I may break it up into like 5 books. To make them into smaller books. So that's something I'm working on. But if people Google, they will be able to find it. And thank you all for sharing as well. Appreciate it. So powerful.
Do you want to give your, Dr. Nancy, would you give your full name so that people can know that?
Yep.
And then also if they, a way to contact you?
Yeah. So if people Google Nancy, N-A-N-C-Y, V for Vanessa, and then Brown, they'll be able to find me. Or even I come up under Dr. Nancy V. Brown or Dr. Nancy V. Brown Willis. So, I mean, once you put Nancy V. Brown, you're going to find me because I've done a lot of work in the hair loss industry for many years. So, you'll be able to find me. My Instagram is Nancy V. Brown, and I have a few other Instagrams. I have Nancy V. Brown Ministries, Brave Girls Rise Up, Nancy V. Brown Speaks. So, I mean, we'll be able to.
Okay, we got 60 seconds. So thank you, everybody, for all your participation. And we had a really good show, and we invite you all to come back, be on the panel or be a guest, and have a wonderful evening or morning or wherever you're at. Thanks,
thank
everyone.
You.
Bye now.
What was the name of the adult?
What I've left behind, you want again. I'm locked up in memory. They all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know